state and national advocacy. The Global Healthy Living Foundation.
That's right.
Okay, so you guys are talking about something here that when I started reading it, the first thing I read was biosimilars.
Yep.
Okay, which means like bio, like something else.
Yep.
And these are versions of certain medications. And the examples that I have here are Humira and Enbrel.
That's right.
And those are pretty popular medications, right?
Very
popular. So what, explain what biosimilars are and how they can apply to us and how, you know, not just governments, but people, how we can save money.
Sure. Thanks, Mark, and I appreciate the time.
Sure.
You showed it in. So I'm with the Global Healthy Living Foundation. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, a national patient advocacy organization. So we look out for folks that have chronic diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, lifelong diseases that can be debilitating for many folks. Over the years, these types of patients have come to rely on an innovative type of product called a biologic medicine. So these biologic medicines are large molecules. They're typically made from living cells. They are incredibly complex. They include therapeutic proteins, DNA vaccines, large words like monoclonal antibodies.
Right.
Basically, what they do is they treat some of the most complex diseases known to man.
So the difference, well, one of the differences would be a pharmaceutical is a chemical compound.
You got it.
Right?
Yep.
That's where they make them, in the lab. It's a chemical compound to affect something that's going on in your body.
That's right.
And make that a positive effect. But for a lot of people with chronic illnesses, the use of pharmaceuticals actually has negative connotations, especially in liver and kidney functions where all that stuff gets processed.
Yeah.
So we'll get to cost and all the stuff. So where this comes in, they're made from cells to act just like a medication, a pharmaceutical would.
So they're actually, you can think of them as pharmaceutical medications 2.0.
Okay.
So the type of medication you just described is a chemical, a synthetic chemical that is easily reproduced.
Right.
And so we know of those as generic medications.
Right. They produce them on a massive scale.
You got it.
Once you get the chemical compound, you got it.
Yep. And so biologics are the next generation of traditional medications. They are grown rather than synthetically created. And they treat a patient in a more targeted manner. So they look at the cause of disease rather than treating necessarily just the symptoms of the disease.
And that's one of the issues that I talk to people all the time. I say, you know, it came up in the context of psychological disorders in young people. And I was talking to somebody and I said, you know, you could work on trying to take care of this person and manage their illness, but what you're doing with these medications is you're masking the root problem of why their brain or body functions in a certain way and compels them to do certain things. So it's a masking thing. You're treating a symptom, but you're not really getting to the root of the issue to help that person control and maintain themselves in a certain way. And that's just psychological.
Yeah.
Physically, again, we're masking a symptom like pain medication.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've had both knees replaced. I don't have my arthritis there anymore, but I have it in my back. And, you know, the pain is excruciating. And I have osteo, not rheumatoid, but pain medication just masks the pain.
You're right.
It's still there.
Yep.
I still have the situation.
Absolutely. And for portions of the population, you know, pain medication is very critical for the therapy under the guidance, of course, of a physician. But going back to the biologic therapies, these therapies have had life-changing effects for people.
In what ways? Give me an example.
So, perfect example is kind of an anecdote that a lot of FDA officials like to talk about when we bring together a lot of these patients in you know, big briefings or hearings in Washington, D.C. FDA officials like to talk about going back about 10, 15 years ago when we had meetings with rheumatoid arthritis patients. They used to have to set aside a separate room just for wheelchairs. And now, today, they don't need that room anymore because biologic therapies have literally taken people out of wheelchairs and put them back into society, put them back into active lifestyles with their families, with their coworkers, and they've given their lives back. So one of the remaining hurdles, though, with these medications is the cost. They're very expensive.
Yes.
Primarily because they're very expensive to create. They're very expensive to manufacture and deliver to patients.
See, now what you're saying, though, I know a lot of people are thinking, my God, where has this been all my life? And why hasn't it become more of a norm?
Yeah.
And I'm sure on the political side, the pharmaceutical industry would fight this kind of thing to the nail.
Well, that's the funny thing, Mark, is that actually the pharmaceutical industry in this particular instance is on our side, is on the side of the patient.
Right.
And so what? So let's get to biosimilars. So biosimilars, in 2010, under the Affordable Care Act, one of the pieces that a lot of people like about the Affordable Care Act was this aspect that created a pathway for cheaper versions of these biologic therapies. So the FDA and the government said, let's make it easier for manufacturers and cheaper for manufacturers to bring products like these to the market. How can we do that? And so what they did was they created what we call an abbreviated approval process. So making it shorter, making it cheaper for companies, incentivizing them to create lower cost versions of this. And so so scientists were able to reproduce biologics or mimics of them to a degree of similarity that they believe is safe and effective. So if you have a product like, say, Humira or Enbrel, scientists essentially reverse engineered those products. And they said, we have created a replica of this that we think is so close to the innovative product that we can safely and effectively give it to a patient, and they won't react, their bodies won't react in a harmful way.
So what have the results been? Because, of course, we know the process is exhaustive.
Exactly.
You know, you have to go through so much with blind studies and focus groups and other studies. It has to be studied to death, and then it has to be gone over by the FDA. And so how long has this process been going on? And you know, when can people start looking for these types of products to where they don't have to take the pharmaceuticals anymore? Of course, you would ask your doctor first.
Yeah, great question, Mark. So we've had four of these biosimilars approved so far.
Okay.
Three of which are indicated for the diseases that many of the patients within our community, Global Healthy Living Foundation, suffer with, so rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, these types of diseases. It's important also to note that these products have been on the market in Europe for about 5 years or so. The Europeans have been realizing cost savings from these biosimilar versions, again, of the innovator biologic products.
Okay.
So these are mimics of the biologics.
Right.
They've seen in Europe about a 20 to 30% cost savings.
Now, how do they do that? How would, because that's what we, the American people, that's what we want. We want, okay, why does it cost so much for this medication? How can we make it better and make it cheaper?
And I think the answer for America is through this abbreviated approval process. So we can get there by making it a shorter process to get approval and a cheaper process to get approval. The idea being that then manufacturers take that cost savings and put it right back into the total cost of the product.
Right.
Now, our question, there's a lot of just the manufacturer. There's insurance companies, there's pharmacy benefit managers. There's a lot of talk on Capitol Hill right now about how those other players are affecting the cost of medications. And that's what I think we as consumers, as Alaskans here, need to be very vigilant about, is watching if we do realize the cost savings to the patient from these biosimilars. Right. And we have to watch whether or not these other stakeholders, like insurance companies, like pharmacy benefit managers, end up reaping some costs out of what should be the savings to the patient.
So how do we find out more information about these, and what can we do to affect change?
Great question. So first of all, you can visit our website. We have two of them. The Global Healthy Living Foundation, so www.ghlf.org or creakyjoints.org.
Yes, that's me.
We have,
they used to call me Rusty Hinge. That's what I am. So we'll link those on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
And make a link. So, but what can people do to be more of an advocate ourselves? Do we contact our congressional delegation and tell them, hey, this is a big concern about us?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I would recommend looking up the health committees within your state, as well as within the federal government. So the Senate Health Committee is the health committee in the Senate, and the Energy and Commerce Committee is the committee in the House. I also recommend that people get involved in advocacy organizations relative to their diseases. So,
yep.
Organizations like ours and many others are very active on this topic.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Appreciate so much time.
We'll get that stuff up on our Facebook page. Thank you very much, Steve. And we're going to take a break. This is FM.